everyone. Can you hear me? Okay. So thank you for coming. We've actually haven't really done something like this in a church before, so we're really honored to have Susan to come and talk to us about siblings and how our kids can get along with each other better. I know personally, like, we have two boys and we really needed to hear this, so I'm really looking forward to her talk, and I think she's going to give us some really helpful, practical advice that you can take home with you. So you should all have a packet, and you should all have pens if you need anything. Water or drinks are down there, and then we also have bathrooms that are, like, right outside the hallway. So you're welcome to use any of the facilities here. Susan, the way I met her, she's wonderful. I would like to say that Noah's Ark is probably the best preschool that, in my opinion, in the area. So we're really proud to be able to send our son Micah there, and he went there for 1 year when he was 4, and he absolutely loved it and made some good friends, including Caleb. So Susan has a degree in early childhood education and has been a preschool director for 20 years, and she has raised two boys herself, and she comes from a family of 5. So I'm sure she will have very good insights to share with everyone. I'm sure she also welcomes questions too. So feel free to, you know, shout out your questions. You don't have to wait until the end. We can make it an interactive session. All right, let's give her a hand.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me come. I'm going to share a little bit more about my background. So I am 53 years old and one of 5 children, and I loved being a sibling, and I was the youngest sibling. And as we talk a little bit, if I have time, I might get into birth order, because that does also come into play with sibling rivalry. But I was the baby, and I loved it because there was always somebody to play with. Whenever I got bored, I could always go find somebody to play with. And I shared with somebody here that my father was a teacher for North Colony Schools, and he also was a soccer coach at Siena College and a soccer and volleyball coach at Shaker High School. So he was a very busy dad. But in the summer, he had the summers off. And so when I was in elementary school, he took all 5 of us in a station wagon. That was back before car seats. And we went out. We drove our car all the way out through Wyoming, Colorado, Montana. And one of the best memories I have as a child are of these trips, because there was no TV, so that didn't compete with our time together. I didn't have any of my neighborhood friends or even school friends there, so I was forced all the more to play with my siblings. And my mother was a preschool teacher as well for Loudonville Community Church. And so she was smart. She brought a lot of chapter books, and she read to us. We read Rascal and Cheaper by the Dozen and shared a lot of laughter as we were reading together. And we sang a lot in the car. And I found this really interesting piece of information. Oh, where did it go? Anyways, the information was that it is more important the positive shared experiences a child has than even the quarreling that they have. So in other words, if you can get your children to share in memorable experiences and happy family experiences, that is what promotes, when they get older, them being close together. Even if they are fighting, that those shared experiences are intrinsic and a part of it. And that's a positive way of looking at it rather than the negative way of looking at it. And we found that to be true. Those shared memories of my siblings are what tie us together now. And as I shared with somebody here, my mom is now 90 years old and has Alzheimer's/dementia. She's incontinent, in a wheelchair, and very needy. And my dad is 87, has had heart attacks, is very weak. And I don't know what I would do if I didn't have 4 siblings to help share this heavy burden. And the thing is that we have our parents, you know, usually our parents are in their 20s, 30s when they have us. We may have our parents for 30, 40 years of our life, but we have our siblings for, if we live to 80, all 80 years. And what we give our children when we promote healthy relationships between siblings is that long-term investment. And I'm finding now that I'm closer to my four siblings now in my 50s than I was my whole life. And so that's a beautiful, beautiful gift that you give to your children when we promote sibling, the positivity among siblings. Now, of course, my siblings were not perfect. My middle sister, I sometimes had a really difficult time with when I was little. My dad was very strict, and at the dinner table, you know, we could talk, but we couldn't, you know, whine or make a lot of noise or yell. And, you know, he had been with children all day, so he was very strict at the dinner table. Which also, can I give a little plug for dinner time together? Research shows that families who eat dinner together are stronger as well. And it's just something that in our busy society that we're starting to lose. But anyways, at the dinner table, she sat next to me. We had like assigned seats, and she would always like push my chair and just turn it the wrong way, and it would so annoy me. I don't know why. So I'd move it back, and then just when I was comfortable, she'd move the chair again, or she'd pinch me. And so eventually I get to the point where I'd squawk with upsetment, and then who would get in trouble? Me. And she'd be grinning right next to me, the feeling of power, you know, that she got me in trouble. And we had a lot of little sibling issues like that too. But this same sister is the sister who visited me when I was in Bible school in Texas, and poor as anything, because I was, I didn't realize this Bible school, when you go to college, you know, and you take out college loans, they come due a year after you leave college. Well, this Bible school I thought was accredited, and it wasn't. So my college loans came due from my university, as well as me trying to pay for Bible school. And my father was the kind of father that said, you make your own way. That's how you grow strong. So I was trying to pay for like both bills, working, going to school. And she came to visit me, and she saw I didn't have a pair of sneakers. And I was kind of proud. I'm like, I'm fine. I don't need them. And she said, well, I want to shop for myself. So she went and bought sneakers for herself. And then she left to go back to California, and of course she left the sneakers there for me. And she's also the same sister that when her firstborn was born, she wasn't feeling well, and she was very overwhelmed with parenting, and I had just finished school, and she called me out of desperation and said, help me, help me. And I went and stayed with her for 5 months and took the midnight feeding and the middle of the night feeding. And that same little girl has grown up, and I don't have girls, to be like a second daughter to me, and has brought me so much joy. So, I mean, the benefits just keep growing and growing and growing. And that's what we want to show our children, the long-term benefits as well as the short-term benefits. I have a other side of a story that's not so good but ends good, and that's my husband. My husband, his two parents are from Greece. They met on the boat coming over, immigrating here, and they had to work very hard to make a life for themselves. So they wanted to have a diner, and they were working many, many, many more than 40 hours, both of them, to make a life for themselves. So the grandmother came over from Greece to take care of the children. And you know that children have some basic needs, and some of their basic needs are they have a need for love, a need for attention, a need for respect, a need for space. And Billy's mom was not able to really give when he was born. She was working full-time, had a baby, had a two-year-old, and research also shows, which I shared with you before, one of you, that what the most difficult sibling rivalry arises when children are less than 2 years apart and the same sex. So if you have two boys, which they did, and they were less than 2 years apart, which they were, that creates a area for the most sibling rivalry, because they share space and they're close together, and they can be it's hard for them because people can compare them, and they have to share mom's lap. The baby, the two-year-old's barely off the mom's lap, and that baby is born. When my children were born, they were 3.5 years apart, and my little one was already going to preschool and independent, and that makes it a lot easier. So anyway, she'd go to work, and the grandmother would call on the phone in desperation because the two-year-old brother would bite my husband's ears till they bled. because he had so much jealousy, so much envy of this baby who was getting so much attention. A two-year-old doesn't know how to articulate it, that they have needs or that they're feeling lost. And so instead, he would just bite my husband's ears till they bled. And that's a story that's told over and over again. And it happened throughout life that they had such issues with competition and such issues with sibling rivalry. And then my husband had a sister born 8 years later, and there was no sibling rivalry. One's a male, one's a female. They're 8 years apart, and they have an extremely close relationship. So the good news is that as of today, my husband and his brother do have a good relationship, but they had to work very, very, very hard on it, and there was a lot of pain involved. And so when our children were being born, I said to my husband, I want to be intentional about this. I don't want to parent by the seat of my pants. I don't want to just parent and hope that they'll be good friends. Everything we do, I want to keep in the back of my mind this goal that I want them to be best friends. So if you read the Bible, you'll know that the story of King David and Jonathan. And so I love the story so much because they loved each other like brothers that I named my boys David and Jonathan in the hopes that it would be prophetic, that they grow up to be best friends. And everything that we did to promote this closeness between them. And I can tell you that they're not perfect. They're growing up, and I still have prayers for them that I'm waiting to see happen. But the one thing I can tell you with absolute certainty is they're absolute best friends. And they are always helping each other in many, many ways. And they are always thinking of each other. And just the last April, we just went to visit them in Colorado. My 29-year-old works for GE and Boulder, and my 25-year-old works for an attorney in Denver. And they get together almost every weekend. And we were walking, and my oldest was going through some hard times. And I saw them walking ahead, and they were laughing with each other, and one put his arm around each other. And so afterwards, I came up and said, "You just look so relaxed with your brother," I said to the oldest. And he said, "Well, of course, Mom, I know he has my back, and I feel safe when I'm with him." And that's what we want for our children. We want to promote that kind of thing, because you know what? The world is hard, and your children are all young, but they have little problems now. And when they grow up, they're going to face a world that is changing, and it's often very scary, and they're going to hit so many problems, and they're going to want somebody to be on their team. And that's what we want to create for our children. We want to create an atmosphere, rather than competition, of cooperation, rather than envy, of love. And so I'm going to share with you some ideas about that. So we're going to, oh, sure. Well, that is what we were going to talk about. One of the dangers, and I tell them all the time that I love them with all of my heart. There's a children's book out there. I think it's called I Love You, the Purplest. And it's talking about how each one that you love with your own heart, all of it, but in a different way, because they're each unique. They're each an individual. And it's very dangerous to have a favorite. If you look at the Bible, you're going to see example after example of the danger of having a favorite. And there's some research out there that says with moms, I think we'll get into it in a little bit down there, but I think 3 out of 5 moms do have a favorite, even if they won't admit it. And that's where we can have some of the problem. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because you remember the oldest boy who bit the little boy's ears till they bled? His mom told me when I was getting married that the youngest was her favorite. And I do think that's part of the problem, because even if she didn't articulate it, the children sense it, and it creates such damage between the two children, with the other one feeling insecure and always trying to up the other one to get that blessing from the mom. When we love our children unconditionally, we're giving them the blessing, like Abraham gave his son the blessing. And even God, the Father himself, when Jesus was baptized and came out of the water, he said, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." Every child should have that blessing to know that they're not compared one with another, that they were created for a purpose. And that purpose is why they have the personality they have, the temperament they have, the birth order they have. Otherwise, a child will always compare. But if a child knows that they're loved and accepted for who they are, they won't be as jealous with another child. So if we go to the first page where it says sibling rivalry, it says, why can't our kids just get along? Sibling rivalry is a cry often heard. Hold on. It leaves the parents feeling exhausted and worn out by all the bickering, teasing, and competing. One study showed that younger siblings have as many as 5 to 10 conflicts with each other per hour, and this is normal. Another study I looked up said 4 to 8 spats every hour with preschoolers to going into elementary. And the emotions parents feel are many. We can feel angry. We can feel helpless. We can feel exasperated. We can feel hopeless. We can feel sad about this. We can feel disappointed. We can feel overwhelmed. So today's goals for me with all of you is that, one, first of all, that we give up the fantasy that our children will be loving to each other all the time and accept the fact that as long as there's more than one child in the house, sibling rivalry is inevitable. It's in every family and a natural part of sibling relationships. I mean, even Jesus himself, who was perfect, his brothers didn't even respect him in the beginning. Okay, so here we go. The second goal is that we realize that sibling rivalry can be beneficial and constructive as long as it doesn't get out of hand. And then that God will use sibling rivalry to develop your child's character, to develop patience, to develop empathy, and looking from another person's perspective, and to develop kindness and love and gentleness and all the fruit that comes from that. And that, lastly, that we have faith in that outcome of closeness, that we actually have a picture in our mind of this. And that's called faith. Faith is the substance of things not seen. And I actually did that with them. I would picture them as grown-up adults, loving and caring for each other. And that picture in my mind was a goal to shoot for. But if we have the picture of the opposite, oh, these children, they're gonna kill each other. You know, that isn't that, they pick up on that. So we want to have faith in what we don't yet see and recognize it's a long-term goal. This long-term goal begins as imitation. If you look at studies of the brain, and there's just more and more, and they're so fascinating. I love to read about it. But really, young children learn through imitation. That is the best way they learn. And so they imitate us. And if we're showing positive problem solving, if we're showing kindness to our spouse and to each other, these are the things they will naturally imitate, and then they'll become a part of a habit, which becomes part of a character. And someone once said to me, how do you get good character in children? And I tell them, you sow a kind thought and it reaps a kind action. So we have to give them the suggestion. Let's say they're kind of being harsh on their brother, and you can say, well, why don't you help him build up the tower? He's feeling so frustrated. Remember when you couldn't do that? So you give him a kind thought, it produces a kind action. Those kind actions then produce kind habits. Those kind habits then produce a kind character. And so it all starts with the thought, and that we have to help them with those good thoughts to move into actions, to move into habits, to move into character. So sibling rivalry can enhance emotional development and emotional maturity as long as they're learning to understand their own emotions, to express their feelings, to notice the effect their words are having on others. All throughout preschool, we have altercations. We have a great preschool, but this is a practice ground in learning how to get along. And often a child will do something harsh. They'll grab a toy or push a child away, and we'll have to say, look at his face, how does he look? And then we'll say to that child, how do you feel? I feel mad, or I feel sad. And we get that child to think about the other person, because children that young are impulsive. They're not thinking about hurting that child. They're just thinking about getting their needs met. And we have to slow them down and help them to see the other person's feelings. And then we have to help that child that injured the other one to stand up for themselves and to express what their needs are. And we have to help the one that did that to ask for forgiveness. And it's doing it in that little bits every day. And the most exhausting time is when they're preschoolers, because children don't come out of the womb and you say to them, "Now, honey, stop sharing so much. You're sharing too much." And we don't say this other one, "Stop being so nice to your brother." It's the opposite, because we're born with a sin nature and we're born very egocentric. And it's part of growing up to learn how to socialize, to learn to think from somebody else's perspective. And that's where parents and teachers come into play. So what are the benefits of having a sibling? When we think about that, then we can help our children see the benefits and appreciate their siblings more. So here we go, some of the benefits. So sibling rivalry can enhance emotional development. A sibling is often a natural ally and often on the same wavelength. Siblings are likely to engage in the sort of pretend play that helps children to develop an awareness of others' feelings and mental states. You know, I remember, even though my brothers were so much older than me, when we were getting picked on the neighborhood, all we had to do is call my big brother and he'd come and protect us. And that made me feel closer to him. And he was an ally. And my sister Lauren, when I had nightmares in the middle of the night, we shared a room and I'd crawl into her bed. And even though it was 2 a.m, I'd say, "I can't sleep. Will you scratch my back?" And she did. And that promoted beautiful feelings between us. Research show that people who grow up with siblings are more altruistic. So believe it or not, your kids are learning to be more altruistic. Children who grow up with siblings have a better likelihood of making and maintaining friendships. Reduced expectations. If you have more than one child, all that parent's expectations don't fall on you. And believe me, I see that at my preschool. Children who are only children, I can almost feel the pressure on them. I remember this one little 3-year-old who was an only child. She said to me, she had a little bathroom. She's like, "Don't tell mom. Don't tell her. She'll be so upset with me." Whereas other children have an accident and they don't think anything of it. But she felt the pressure of pleasing her mom even at that very young age. And when she became a teenager, because I kept in contact with them, she often had bouts of anxiety about pleasing her parents and the expectations that she's the only one to fulfill that role, you know, of going to college and doing this and doing that. So when you have more siblings, it kind of takes the pressure off. Siblings also help you develop conflict resolution and problem-solving skills as they negotiate and compromise. People without strong family bonds died an average of 7.5 years earlier than those with solid connections. And I'm going back to the negotiating and compromising. I still remember when we used to get our Easter baskets back then. This is before we didn't have a lot. So we got a lot of jelly beans because they were cheaper than the chocolate eggs. And I just remember we 5 kids sitting on the ground and I'm like, "I'll give you 3 black ones for 1 red bean." And they're like, "No, no, no. How about 2 orange and 3 red and 4 white ones for the 1 red?" And we would do all this negotiation, and we actually were learning something while we were doing that. Okay, so going back. Research shows that siblings who learn how to solve conflicts with brothers and sisters, they do better at school. Sibling rivalry can motivate children to choose different niches in which to excel. And that is very true. So my oldest son, Jonathan, he was very into science and nonfiction right when he was a little child. And he also liked competitive sports like soccer, where you're on a team. And he also loved drums. And he was 3.5 years older, so he had already gotten those interests at an early age by the time David came around, my youngest. So my son David, without realizing it, tried to find different arenas in which to shine in, because a younger child will see that older child is just infinitely better because they're older. Not necessarily they're better, but they can do everything better. So what he did is, instead of cooperative sports, he chose individual sports. So he never played on a team. He did things like skateboarding and snowboarding, which are individual. Instead of drums, he chose guitar, and he's an excellent guitarist today. Instead of science, he chose math. And that helped him forge his way into a new and independent path. Sibling rivalry can teach children to be assertive and stand up for their position. Siblings have each other when parents become elderly to help as they go through hard times. And as I shared with you all, my parents are very old and very elderly. And there's times when I just want to weep. I'm so sad seeing them lose a sense of who they are. I'm so sad seeing them lose their dignity. My dad, who is a very independent, strong man, just recently lost his ability to drive. And I just, my heart grieves when I see him stuck at home and not able to get out. And I have to release that because it's too sad for me. So what do? I call one of my siblings, cry on the phone, and who understands better than my siblings what I'm going through? They're the only people that remember your parents when they were young and when they did have that vitality. Okay, so we're going on to the next one. So that's to encourage you that there's good things that are coming out of their fights. All right, so why do siblings fight? Why? Children have to share a lot. They have to share their parents' love, attention, the attention of relatives. Oh, I remember when our favorite uncle came. Oh my goodness, my sister and I would get in fights trying to squeeze in to be the one that sat next to him, and I'd push her and she'd push me back and we'd get in trouble, but I just so wanted to be near this uncle. And they have to share space. If they share a room, that can be complicated because I remember I was a slob and my sister was very neat, but we solved it on our own without my parents' help. We put a yellow piece of tape down the room and her side stayed neat and my side was sloppy and we both were happy. So let's see, where am I? They have to share their space. They have to share possessions. And so those kinds of things just lead up to problems, as well as legitimate needs. And we talked about children needing love, needing space, needing respect, needing a measure of independence and control to thrive. When parents are very, very strict, they take away a child's chance to make mistakes, a child's chance to try new things. And when a child feels without power, they'll find a negative way to get that power. And often that is in being mean to a sibling and seeing them get upset because that gives a feeling of power. So if you don't want that, make sure your children, that you are allowing them as they get older. We often don't see them getting older and we still keep these rules on them and we're not letting them stretch their wings. And in this world, we need to raise resilient children, not secure, pampered, not insecure, pampered, overprotected children who in the end, it's more dangerous for them because they don't have that feeling of, I can do it myself, because they've never tried because mom has protected them so much, or dad. So back to this, the legitimate needs they have that can create. And then because of sin nature, selfishness, sin, self-centeredness, insecurity, jealousy also come into play. Why do they fight? They fight to get attention from you. They would rather have negative attention than no attention at times. And I see that at the preschool. It's hard for young children to articulate it, but I actually had one little boy say that to me, that he was just getting into so much trouble. And it was at the end of the school year, and he finally said, I'm going to miss you, teachers, and I'd rather you be yelling at me and paying attention to me than not having any attention at all. So when a child has a love tank, all of you think of your children as a car. A car has a gas tank. A gas tank has to be filled. And often we give our children a lot of love one day, and we think, oh, that should last for the whole week. But it doesn't. Just like if you don't fill up that gas tank in the car every week, that car will not run. And if you don't fill up your children's love tank every week, that child will have misbehavior. Now, I'm not saying they still won't have misbehavior, but if a child is feeling loved, they're much more likely to behave and to receive correction from you in a positive manner. Okay, so they fight to get attention from you. They fight to feel powerful. They fight when they're bored. So these are the things that we also can keep for strategies. Are my children too bored? Are my children not getting enough attention? They fight to get physical contact. Now, here's another thing a lot of parents don't realize. And children have different love languages. I don't know how many people are aware of the book Five Love Languages. No? Okay. There's a book out there, and that's another topic I can come back and share on. But children, because they are different, every child's unique and different, receive love in different ways. So there is some children receive love by gifts. Some children receive love by our words of affirmation. Some children receive love by just quality time when you drop everything and you get in their face and you listen to them and you just are not rushed. You show you are important and I'm sitting and listening to you. What you say has value. Those are the quality time children. And then another love language is physical touch. And then another language is acts of service when you do something for them. Their bike is broken and they keep asking for you. If you fix it right away, they just feel so loved. And so often we think we're loving our children really well, when what happens is we're loving them in the language that is not theirs. And so they have a misperception. They don't feel loved. You love Johnny and you love Mary, but you don't love me. And you're like, what? I love you. Why? Where are you getting this from? It could often be that we're loving them in the language that's not theirs. So my oldest love language was acts of service, and it was words of affirmation. And my youngest was touch, and it was quality time. Now my oldest didn't need a lot of hugs. And if I hugged him too much, he actually got irritated. My youngest, you couldn't hug enough. You couldn't tickle enough. And there's many ways to love in a physical touch. It's not just hugging or kissing. It's tickling. It's wrestling. Why do they always want to wrestle? They need that physical touch. Now, go back many years to Russia when they had babies in the orphanage where they didn't touch them. They put them in their little isolettes and left them. And they had what was called failure to thrive. Those babies died for no other health condition than they weren't touched. Children need to be touched, and some more than others. And if you do that 15 minutes of wrestling with one of your love language child and then ask him to do chores, he's much more likely to do it or get along with his sibling than if you didn't do that. And sometimes with my youngest, I'd have to do that. I'd find he'd walk by me and he'd whack me, or he'd just do these silly things. And then I realized he's calling for attention, and I'd throw him down and tickle him up. And then he was happy as a clam. Now, I couldn't use that same strategy with my oldest one. My oldest one, it would be more like he wanted to do an important science project, and I took him to A.C. Moore so he could pick out all the things he needed to make this huge structure. He would feel so loved, you know? So we have to really watch our children. What is it that they're crying out for so that we can show them we really, truly love them with the language they need? But sometimes children fight simply because when they fight, they're having physical contact with each other when they're wrestling and whacking each other. And we have to realize maybe we can do this in a more positive manner. And why don't we get out the squirt guns and have a family squirt gun fight? Or why don't, you know, before it gets into something like this. They fight to become the favored one in a parent's eyes by making a sibling look bad. And that's definitely the situation if there are favorites in the family. Or let's say a child perceives daddy and mommy didn't want me to be a girl. They wanted me to be a boy. And somehow a grandparent said something to them along that manner, or somebody else said it. And it may not even be true, but children can get hurt by misperceptions. And if they feel that, you know, they're not loved because of their gender, that is another area for sibling rivalry that can be very insidious. Okay. They also fight when there's broken boundaries, and we have to set rules in the household. We have to set rules of respect. If a child is borrowing somebody else's clothes without permission and getting stains on it, that's going to cause a lot of sibling fighting. And so we have to have not a huge amount. Too many rules, research shows, leads to sibling rivalry. Not enough rules leads to sibling rivalry. And that's why parenting is so tough, isn't it? We need God. We need the grace of God, because we have to find that middle line. And then just when we find the middle line, they get older and we have to change that middle line. But we really need to find that balance between permissiveness and harshness. So they also fight with unresolved issues and resentments, which also goes back to we have to listen. We have to take time and listen to our children, and especially when we know we have busy lives. So when I started, When I started to go to work full time, even though my boys were older by then, I made it a habit. And I know this sounds silly, because by now they were in elementary school and even into high school, that every night before they went to bed, I came into their room, because they never seemed to want to talk to me when it was convenient. If I came home from school and I asked how were things, they'd be like, oh, fine, or they never wanted to talk. But when they wanted to talk was in the car or at nighttime. And often I was so exhausted, but I knew that I could find the heart of my child if I went in the room late at night. And I read to my children all the way through high school. That sounds corny too, but remember, my mom read to us as children and even young adults, and we found so much family beauty out of it. So when my son David, who had a processing disorder, was in high school and having to read some very difficult books for literature, he'd read a chapter and I'd read a chapter and we'd be hanging out in bed. And remember, he's my child that loved touch. And, you know, when I'm doing that, he's putting his arm around me or flicking my hair. But we are connecting. And that's usually when he opened up that he was upset that something that Jonathan did. And I had to explain it to him. If we help our children understand who the other child is, their challenges, their personalities, and their strengths, we break it down for them. And if we're reminding them of the good things they do too, so if he's, after I hear his resentment and we talk about it, I also remind him what his brother has done that is good. And we always want to be the champion for the other sibling and let the other sibling see that sibling in the highest light without creating resentment. Not saying, oh, he's the smart one and you're not, you know, he's what? No, you're more saying, you know, I noticed the other day you forgot your backpack. He was the one that ran in to get it for you. Now you're highlighting the connection that you have between the two of you. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the factors that influence sibling rivalry. So we already talked about birth order, but I have a little story about birth order, and I like it, so I'm going to read it to you. Am I keeping you on track? Oh, and you had a question.
Yeah, I'd like to know, you mentioned that you set your rule in the middle line. What happens if one crosses the line? How reinforce the rule?
We were big on having family meetings or having the children meet on their own. So if my two children started to get in a fight and they couldn't deal with it, I did step back a little bit. That's the middle line, is you don't want to jump in too quickly, or they're always coming to you with the, mommy, he did this, mommy, he did that, and then you become the referee. So you do step back, because you wait and see if they have the tools and the ability to handle it. But then if they don't, rather than just punishing them, like in the olden days, and I have to say, even my dad was like this. I just want to tell you what the olden days strategies that don't work for this time are. Just stop fighting. I can't take it anymore. Don't bother me with your silly fights. Just work it out for yourself. Well, what those things are saying is your needs are more important than their needs. When don't just stop fighting. I can't take it anymore. The second one, don't bother me with your silly fights. It's like, I don't care. You just do it. And what research shows is if you have a bully in the family, when you turn your back on it, say, just stop it, yes, there'll be less sibling fights, but that bully will feel empowered and will go after the other one, because what you're saying is it's okay. So you can't do that. And the next one, I don't care who started it, you'll both be punished. Well, maybe you stopped it right then, but did they learn anything from it? Every problem is an opportunity for learning. Some of you are from GE. You're the most problem-solving people. Instead of being blame-based, let's be solution-oriented, right? Let's teach our children how to be solution-oriented, right? You get much more out of that. Oh, yeah, my son is also a black belt, and he tells me some things he learned from that. But anyways, it's the next one. Why can't you just be nice to each other? In a sense, you're criticizing them. You're not helping them. If you don't stop fighting, I'm going to tell your father when he gets home. You're delaying the problem. You're not giving them the tools. So we want to discard those approaches that were not helpful that our parents did, and we want to be intentional using approaches that are effective. So we want to set, in a family meeting, before the problems happen, we want to set some basic rules. Like, we don't hit or touch or pinch each other. We don't use name calling. Like, I'm sure my sons at 25 and 29 now may use words like jerk and shut up. In fact, I'm sure they do. But in my presence, I'm telling you, I struck a hard line. There was never name calling in my house, and we never said shut up. And I had to follow it with my husband. I never called my husband a name. I may have felt like it, I'll be honest. And I never said shut up to him, because they imitate. And I had to set a high standard so that they would imitate and follow that standard. And then second, when we make up those rules, we let the children come in on the rules, because children feel empowered when they're part of it. If you're at a GE meeting and they're just telling you what to do, you're not involved in it. If they're asking you what to do and asking for your investment in it, how much more likely are you going to follow through when you are the one that gave the idea? Right? It's the same with children. If you tell them, what would make our house a better place? What would you like to see in our house? What don't you like that your brother or sister does? I don't like when they hit me. Well, then, should we have a rule that says no hitting in the house? Yes! And even better, let them come up with the punishment. Let me tell you, they'll follow through with it more likely than if you make it. And it might even be harsher than when you say. They might be like, well, what if you break someone's toy? I say we give all our allowance back to fix it. Okay, you said it. You know what I mean? And then you go with that. And so you, on the same team, working together, you establish not 300 rules like a Pharisee, which is just overwhelming and you can't follow through, but maybe four family rules that you go by, and what are the consequences? Now, when they're fighting at home, if they are not able to solve a problem, but they didn't hit, or they're getting close to doing that, but you see that the resolution isn't coming, you can say to them, let's say they're watching a video game. You can say the video game goes off, and you two go in your room, and you stand at the door, maybe the rooms are crossed, and you talk to, that way they can't hit each other either. And you talk, I did this with my sons, it really works. And you decide how you're going to solve this. Maybe you'll say one can watch it, to do it today and the next tomorrow. One will say maybe we'll take the turns picking the game that we're doing. Or maybe we'll say let's turn it off and go outside and play. I don't care how you solve it, but until you solve it, you're going to stand there at the door until you've made up the decision. Now they have to think, critical thinking. They have to solve the problem. They also have to agree. They don't want to sit in their room the whole time, and then pretty soon they've forgotten and they've gone off. And what have they learned? They've learned so much more than you saying, that's enough, all right, you both punished, you're not going to have dessert tonight. I mean, it just doesn't make people feel good about the other person or good about the situation, and they haven't learned. So let's do some more proactive solving. But back to where we were. Okay, we were talking about factors that influence sibling rivalry. So I'm going to read. How long do I have to talk? how are you getting tired? Because I haven't even really begun, but I can speed up if you want me to. Do I have till when? Okay, because I have so much. I won't keep you till the evening, though, I promise. Okay. So teaching children about jealousy is also really important. And I love this quote. It says, being jealous of your sibling is like eyeing someone else's gorgeous luggage. You open it up and realize nothing fits. Do you get it? They may want what the other person has, but it doesn't fit them. We're all unique. We're all individuals. And yes, the grass may look greener on the other side. Oh, she gets to do that, and she's so smart, and I'm not. We need to have them really learn to like who they are, because when they like who they are and see their own strengths, they won't be as jealous as their other at their siblings if they are accepting who they are and who God made them to be. And if they see themselves as an important unit, important part of the family, helping to take care of each other, support each other, and bless each other, and having each other's back, that is the atmosphere we want to create. Not one of competition, but one of cooperation. So anyways, here's the story. True story. I came home from group last week determined to do something about Kevin, my middle boy. He's the one who sort of slips through the cracks. If you have middle children, anybody have middle children? Well, anyways. Okay. Neither here nor there. Well, the next morning, I asked him if he'd keep me company while I was on some errands, and he seemed happy. We were talking in the car, and I thought everything was great when he dropped a bombshell. He said, "I wish I weren't me. I wish I were Robert or Danny." I didn't know what to say, so I asked him, "How come?" He said, "The oldest, Robert, gets to do whatever he wants, and everybody goo-goos over Danny, the baby." I started to tell him he shouldn't feel that way, but then I remembered. We want to affirm our children's feelings. You know, feelings aren't right or wrong. Think about it. And when we tell a child, "You shouldn't feel that way," we're stuffing their feelings. And what happens is they begin to repress them. And what you get is a teenager who doesn't talk to you, who has emotional issues. So remember, let's affirm them, even if they're hard feelings to hear at first, which is what he feels right now. So she said, she remembered, and she said, "Well, maybe you'd like to be Danny or Robert, but I wouldn't like it at all." And he said, "Why not?" I said, "Because you're very special. And if you became anyone else in the family, then I wouldn't have you anymore. I wouldn't have my Kevin. And that would make me miserable." Do you hear the unconditional love in that? Do you hear the blessing that you are an important part of this family? You know what he did? He reached over and patted my shoulders. Afterwards, I told myself that one afternoon wasn't going to do it. Kevin needed a lot more time with me and his father. He needed us to beam back to him a feeling of his importance. That touches me. Okay, so we'll move on from there. So that middle story is really hard. The baby can be jealous of the oldest that gets to do everything, and the oldest can be jealous of the baby's attention, and we have to let them know what the strengths are about each birth order. You might say to the baby, "Well, yeah, you don't get to do as many things as the other one, but you get more time with me." Or the older, "Yes, the responsibility is on you, but you get to go places they don't get to go." So you help them understand their position and the blessing that they have for that family. So we talked about spacing, how it's easier when they're farther apart. And gender, it's easier if the parents accept that boy, the boy they get, and the girl they get without wishing for something else. It's temperament differences. We have to help our children understand who they are. Now, children, there's basically four different temperament types, and I do a whole thing on temperaments. And it's really wonderful when we realize our children aren't going to have our temperament, and they're each going to be different, and help the other child understand that. So, for example, the way we all recharge here is different. So I'm going to mention four ways, and I want you to raise your hand if that's you. When you're stressed out, who recharges by physical energy, like playing tennis or golf or going out and running as a runner? Some people do that. If you are stressed out and need recharging, who likes quiet time or time alone? Okay. If you are stressed out and you need to recharge, who likes a party or getting together with girlfriends or going out to eat? Yep. Some of you are like... And then the last group is if stressed out and need recharging, who wants just to do nothing? They don't mind if people are around. They don't need to be isolated in a room, but they just need to slow down and do nothing. And there are some people like that. See, we're all different. You all raise your hands for different things. Our children are like that. And when children come home from school, sibling rivalry can happen in fights when, like one says, "I wanted to play with Sammy, but he went into his room and slammed the door, and he won't let me come in." Well, that's usually your social child that wants something to do. And the one that went in and slammed the door, he's your person who recharges by being alone. And we have to have wisdom to help our children understand that doesn't mean he doesn't like you. That's just the way he's made. If you give him a little time, he'll probably want to come out and play with you. And then why don't we find Susie down the street who you can play with? And that is the case that for me, absolutely, in the house, because I was Mrs. Social, and then everyone else had different personalities, and I had to learn that, and I had to teach both my boys that, too. And Even now to this day, I just love, my oldest is a very serious, intense person who recharges by being alone, and my youngest is Mr. Social, and when they go out to party, usually the oldest doesn't want to go, but he drags them along, and he ends up saying it's good, but all the way, my youngest is giving him pointers. Now remember, don't control the situation, the conversation, and make sure that you reach out and talk to so-and-so, and he breaks it down for him because he doesn't have that great social skills. But my oldest, though he may not have that, he's great with resumes, and he's great with setting goals, and he's often calling up my youngest, now, did you make that resume? And why don't you change it here and there? And they help each other. Do they ask each other to be the same? No, they've learned that the oldest one's never going to be the party person, and the youngest one's never going to be Mr. On Time for everything, and they've learned to accept that about each other. And that's what we want to do with our children. When we help them understand who they are and who their siblings are, there will be less rivalry. All right, so back to the parental intervention. There is a guy named Theodore Dreikers, and he wrote, he's the one that 50 years ago, he theorized that sibling rivalry was an attempt to get children to get parents' attention. And he said the worst thing parents can do is to get involved. Now, this is when the time of my parents. A flurry of studies followed that confirm when parents stay out of children's fight, children indeed do fight less. But here's the catch. Over the years, subsequent research on sibling rivalry has added more complexity to that picture. Listen to this. Yes, siblings fight less without parental intervention, but it's now clear that's because, what I said before, the less powerful child is less likely to stand up for himself if he knows he has no leverage to convince his sibling to take his needs into account. And that was the situation with my husband and his brother. He was bullied all throughout childhood because the parents just said, you solve it yourself. And there's a measure of that that's good, but there's times where we have to step in. Without parental intervention, the majority of disputes end with the less powerful sibling submitting to the will of the more powerful sibling. So neither one learns. The more powerful sibling learns to be bossier and bossier, and the less powerful sibling learns to avoid. So my husband, when we got married, I wanted to play Monopoly. Do you know he wouldn't even play Monopoly with me in the beginning because he had learned to compete with his older brother. He always let his brother win, and so games weren't fun. But he learned to be so submissive to not have problems in the home that he thought like a game wouldn't be fun because he'd have to lose. I'm like, I don't care if you win or lose. We're just playing for fun. These are the negative lessons that children grow up and learn. As one researcher observed, children understand non-intervention as an implicit endorsement of their behavior, which may lead to more frequent or more aggressive conflict. It's certainly true that parental intervention in which parent decides who's right. Oh, and here's the other thing that's not good. When a parent decides who's right and tells the child how to resolve the issue, this also increases sibling rivalry. This approach always worsens the competitiveness between siblings. It doesn't matter who's actually right or wrong. When one child wins the argument because of parental intervention, both children do see the parent siding with the one child that is winning, and the losing child becomes resentful and more likely to initiate another fight, either out of revenge or desire to earn the score. So it's better when we have the conflict not to say, you're at fault and you're in trouble, to say, okay, solutionary rather than blame, how can we fix this, right? Or back to our simple rules of what did we agree with. Okay, so here's some strategies that I have. Involve your children in establishing family roles. Kind words, no name calling. Keep everyone safe, no hitting, no biting, no pinching. And if a toy for young children, if they fight over it, one option, it doesn't have to be, you can use many different options, but the toy could go into timeout until children agree, rather than the children going in timeout. That toy can get put up on the refrigerator, and when they agree what they're going to do, then that toy can come back. No using another's possessions without permission. When you have family meetings, everyone wants to talk at the same time, make a fake microphone, and whoever has the microphone is the one that gets to talk, so everybody gets heard. Siblings need to have their feelings about another acknowledged, like in that story when the mother heard how that child felt. Help them understand each other's temperaments. We talked about that. At bedtime or in the car, encourage conversation when you can talk to them. Okay. I have another story, too, that I think will be good for you. Okay, it goes like this. My son, who is older, and daughter were sitting at the table. It was dinner time, and my son almost always finds a way to get upset with his sister at dinner. I prepared myself mentally beforehand, telling myself that their fight was going to happen and I could intervene without getting angry. Because we all know if we're calm, it helps. And we have to always, you know, keep that game face on, even if we're boiling inside, is that if we teach them to be calm during problems, that we're modeling that for them. So I sat my son next to my daughter instead of sitting between them, which I often try to do to keep a fight from happening. We hold hands before a meal and take a moment to give thanks. So I said, okay, let's hold hands. Immediately, my son protested. Come on, hold her hand now. That's all it took to get him going. My son said, don't force me. And I said, I'm not forcing you, but it'd be good to hold your sister's hand. I didn't make him do it, but I didn't give up on the idea that he could do it. He began to cry and ran from the table. So I followed after him in the next room, and he cried saying, now see, children are icebergs. If you look at an iceberg, you see just the top, the ice. But how many people have seen what an iceberg looks like underneath? It's this huge thing underneath the water. That's your children's feelings and thoughts. Up on that little top is behavior. Children can behave for many different reasons, misbehave. They can misbehave because they're tired. They can misbehave because they're hungry. They can misbehave because they misperceive something. They can misbehave because they're just being deliberately ornery. You know, but we have to find the root so we know how to deal with the fruit. And so you're going to see this child had something in his heart why he didn't want to hold his sister's hand. It wasn't that he just wanted to be disobedient. So he began to cry and ran from the table. I followed after him into the next room, and he cried saying how his sister always hurts him and teases him and kicks him. I kept quiet about the things I know he does to her, and I didn't argue at all. I just listened to the wrongs he felt. So they're going back to first affirming and listening. He cried for a long time. He didn't come back to the table a completely loving brother, but later that night, I heard him talking to her very sweetly, saying, "Do you want me to pick you up? Do you want me to carry you?" Normally, he doesn't want to get physically close to her at all, but as I do more of this listening, I see they're starting to play together more, and he's hugging her sometimes. It's unbelievable, actually. I'm really excited that things are loosening up between them. It's a real challenge for us because we're so tired of their fights and their attitude towards each other. It's hard to be kind and gentle when fights begin, but we're getting the payoff bit by bit. So when you look at that story, you see that underneath that child had something that needed to be let out. And when he felt heard, he could release it, and it empowered him to be kinder to his brother or sister. So we're bound to number five. We don't compare, especially in front of others, or show favoritism. And this is a real big one. We don't even realize we're doing it. And it's not just negative comparing, but it's even positive comparing. So the negative comparing would say, he's my tough one, or she's the black sheep of the family. The person that's labeled the tough one or the black sheep, my sister Kristen got labeled that, my middle sister. And what does that say to her? If you tell your children something, you're the adult, they will believe it. You entrench them in that role, and there's no way they can get out of it. But we don't want to label them. We label the behavior. Let's say she's being difficult and she didn't want to share. We label that we deal with the not sharing, but we don't say you're the difficult one or you're the black sheep, or we don't tell other people about in our desire to be heard too. We have to be careful because they're listening all the time. And it's the converse. We don't say to someone, she's the smart one, or she's the talented one. She plays the accordion, or she plays the violin. What does the other child feel? So even in that, we have to be so careful because children are, they really listen to what we have to say, and they can come up back up to that misperception, mom loves her more than me. And once they've decided that, then sibling rivalry takes on a whole new level. Okay, so we protect our children from being put in a role or being labeled. We don't say he's the difficult one, she's the shy one, he's the smart one. I missed one, number six. Instead of worrying about giving equally, now I know this is in every family, they say, you're not being fair. And parents are always coming up to me saying, how do I be fair? And I always say, instead of worrying about giving equally, you'll drive yourself crazy. When you buy a dress for one, you have to buy a dress for everyone. When one goes to soccer camp, they all have to go to soccer camp. I always said, give individually or uniquely. Don't give equally. And I remember telling my boys that I'm going to give something different at this time to you and something different at this time to you. I always say, but it all evens out at the end. And I'd even say this. I'd say, do you trust that I love you with all my heart? And they'd say, yes. I say, well, then trust that I'm giving uniquely, maybe not equally now, but it will be equal in the end. Because this child might need something at this time, and this child might need something at this time. And it really happens when a child gets sick, or let's say one of the children are battling leukemia, for example, and all the attention has to go to that one. The other children really suffer. But when we explain that, you know, that child needs us, but we're also aware that that can affect the others, and we intentionally give them love, we can say that they will rise through this without being adversely affected. And those are also other things that create sibling rivalry, which we'll get into. So we're almost finished. Well, 8, make sure that each child gets some time alone with each parent. Now, my dad did not do this so much with us. It wasn't is intentional, but he did take me fishing, and I hated fishing, but I just wanted to be with him, and that's why I went. And in fact, he wrote on my excuse for school one time, Susan couldn't come to school because she had piscatorial fever, and if you know Latin, pisca means fish, so she had fishing fever, and they accepted the excuse. But I have a friend who has 5 children now, and the father takes each child out on a Wednesday night, and it's only for an hour because he also works for GE, and he's very busy. But he's down in South Carolina. But he takes each child out for 1 hour for like an ice cream or whatever their love language is. And that way he knows intentionally that each child is getting some time alone with him. Okay, number 9, allow each child to have separate interests and separate social circles because they need to define themselves outside of their family. I always wanted to play with my friends, my sister's friends when they came, and my mom was wise enough to give the first half of that time when her friends came over where I couldn't interrupt them and bother them. But then she'd create some fun project like a, you know, craft or something where everybody could come together and I could be a part of it. And that's just wisdom. Number 10, allow children to have some toys and items they don't have to share with siblings. You know, for children that have, if you have a baby and then a 4-year-old, you know, that baby's going to get into those Legos and knock them off, make sure they're up on a table, make sure they're put away, make sure that that a child doesn't have to share every single thing. They share, and they share because they want to share, but there's some things that they can say are just mine. However, really do activities that siblings enjoy together. I found that one that I wanted to read to you. It was just came out the other day. Oh, it's not there. Where it's on the first one. And that's back to this one. The study from the University of Illinois said it's the amount of positive interactions siblings experience which determines the quality of their relationship, regardless of the number of fights they have. So we want to give them activities that they do together and build on that area of family togetherness. Look for and catch your kids being kind, helpful, or loving to the other and praise them. Have your kids cooperate rather than compete. For example, if they have to pick up toys, don't say, I'm going to see who's faster, because that's creating competition. Say, let's put the timer on the kitchen clock, and if you can beat the clock and get done before it does, we'll all go out for ice cream. Now they're having to work together as a team. We used to raise money to go together on a family outing. When we went on those fishing trips, we used to find these little red Fs, And I'm sorry for environmental people. We didn't know any better back then. But we used to catch all the red Fs, and we'd go to our neighborhood, and we'd sell them. We'd have like a little red F stand, and we would catch like 30 of them. And all the kids wanted to buy one, and they probably didn't take good care of them. But we like would charge a dollar each, and we'd make like $30, and then all of us got to go out to eat, and we were working together for a common goal. It was great. Let's see, so where are we going? 14, help preschoolers find positive ways to use their increased power and size with babies and toddlers. Helping with pushing the stroller, help with feeding the baby, letting them know that that baby is not just the parents, but their own brother and sister. Teaching siblings to surprise each other with help and chores or small gifts. There's a Facebook right now little video that just has me bawling every time, and it's... you probably could, it's probably on YouTube too, and you could YouTube sister buys hamster for brother. So this little brother was saving up his money to buy a hamster, and it was taking weeks and weeks of it, and the sister went out, paid with her own money to buy this hamster. And it shows, the video starts, I even put on my Facebook, so if you want to Facebook me and see it, it's just so precious. It starts out with, she comes in, she said, "Here's a hamster. I bought it for you with my own money." And he bursts out in tears, and he grabs her, and she said, why are you crying? And then she starts crying, and she says, "Are you crying because I'm crying?" And it was so beautiful, because that showed the love, the sacrifice that she gave to do that. And those are the things that cement for siblings. So, for example, I have another sister, Lauren, who when I was going to college, and remember, I was very poor and didn't have any money, and she stuffed something in my suitcase when I was leaving at Christmas break and said, "Don't open it." So this was back when you didn't have really Albany Airport. I had to go all the way to New York City and sit in the subway to get a plane to go to Texas. And I'm sitting in there bored, and I pulled it out, and she wrote, "God so loved the world that he gave." And then she wrote, her name is Lauren. Lauren so loved the world that she gave, and she had a $100 bill in there. Now, this is back in 1981, and, you know, that was a lot of money back then, especially because my sister was saving up to go to Spain for an internship, and she didn't have the money either, but she put my needs above hers, and I just broke down crying in there in the subway, just realizing how much she loved me and how grateful I was to have siblings who say, "I've got your back, I'm in it with you, you know, you can do this," because I was really afraid that I wasn't going to be able to do this, you know, and that letter showed me that I can do it, you know. So our siblings, that's the things that we want to put in our siblings. Okay, so we're ending here. My last thing that I love that my boys did is I taught them to communicate through notes. Now, I know we have texting and all that. Maybe you could do it in texting, but I really love notes. So that when they were mad at each other, they wrote notes. When they were happy with each other, they wrote notes. When they were happy with me, they wrote notes. When they were mad at me, they wrote notes. And we always left them under the doors on the kitchen table. And I remember one time my two boys were in a fight, and they wrote a note, and I would put these notes away to remember. So when I was preparing for this, I'm going through this stuff, and I found this note, and I think it was like my 8-year-old and to my like 5-year-old, and it said, "I'm sorry that I hurt you." And then it said, "Do you want to play?" And it had yes, and it had no, and it said, "Please circle." And they had slipped it underneath the door to each other, and it was circled yes, of course. So see, they solved it all on themselves because they learned how to communicate to each other. You know, he apologized, it didn't, and they went off to play. And I have letter after letter of my boys writing and verbalizing how much they loved us and appreciate us when they would go off to college and leave it on the table. And there's just something, some children are better even at writing things out. And if your children are too young to write, they can draw pictures when they hurt somebody. They can draw a picture of what they did in a sad face, or they can draw a loving picture. And any tangible way to reconnect that bond between sibling is so important. So letters also are a great tool. All right, let's see. I'm almost done. Oh, good. Okay. Pay attention to the time or day or patterns when the conflicts occur. Sometimes a change in routine or having your dinner earlier or a snack before meals can help avert conflicts, because children who are hungry, bored, or tired are always going to be more irritable and fight. Someone said children always fight in the cars, and then I said, well, then if that's the case, make sure you have snacks in the cars or something for them to read or something for them to do in the car if you're doing a lot of traveling. And we said before, model how you solve problems and disagreements with your other. Model how you ask for forgiveness. You know, they will do the same thing. And so I intentionally would ask my husband to forgive me if I did something. Or I would even say, I'm feeling really mad at your dad right now, so I am walking away, but I'm going to think about it and, you know, we'll fix it. And then when we fixed it, we would tell him, Daddy and I talked it through and we're okay. You know, you have to do that, because otherwise they can get very anxious too. And when they see your problems, but they also then learn, how do I make it right? Be careful what children watch on TV. Exposure to violence, of course, we know can increase aggressive behavior. And also, a lot of the modern TV shows show a lot of sibling disrespect. You know, there's tons of name-calling and tons of selfishness and just the opposite of what you'd want to see in your children. So I end the last with a green light, yellow light, and red light. And that is, at green light, if the arguing is normal but mild, tell yourself that your children are having an important experience in conflict resolution. Observe, but don't interfere. See if they can resolve it themselves. Yellow light, that means their volume is going up. They're starting to get an inability to work it out. There might even be threats of physical harm. So then you're going to stop the interaction, review the rules, acknowledge their feelings, and reflect each child's point of view. Describe the problem. Okay, we're having a problem not getting along. Susie wants to watch so-and-so, and you want to watch so-and-so. Instead of saying, who started it, we can say, how can we fix this? Express confidence in the children's ability to find a solution. Accept their solution if they're both in agreement, even if it's not what you would have picked. Older children, as we said before, they can go into the rooms and write the other one a letter. Let's say they're really, really spitting mad at the other one. Well, let them write it all down. That is a way of releasing those emotions so that they can be calm enough to talk about it. Red light, now we have physical harm or emotional harm. That's when we stop the children, we separate them. When children have calmed down, we discuss rules, we have consequences, and we have restitution. If somebody broke somebody, that something, we fix it. And then if conflict between siblings is so severe that it's leading to marital problems or creating danger of physical harm or damaging well-being, we need to get counseling. We need not to be afraid of it. There's no stigma. There's times when we all need help. And we want to catch the problem before it gets too severe. And sometimes just having somebody's unbiased ears or being able to express that need can help a family get through that difficult time. All right, I'm done. Any questions? I hope you found this helpful, and I know I could go on and on, but I know it's hot and I talk very fast, so, but if you have any questions whatsoever, I'd be more than happy to answer them for you.
So at the beginning you talked about, you know, on the dinner table your father was pretty strict, and your sister tried to trick you and get you in trouble.
Yes.
And you got in trouble. For that kind of situation, what's the best way to handle that? I mean, I see it's not really fair to get you in trouble because actually your sister is doing the trick. So, I mean, for this kind of thing, I see that as my home as well.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things to it. First of all, as a parent, my father was tired. And I look back, often we need to forgive our own parents for the things that we do. My dad was a great dad, don't get me wrong. He gave me so many wonderful experiences. But in that situation, he was too tired to look at the root instead of the fruit. And as a parent, we should stop and say, this is happening a lot, because it was happening a lot. Why is this happening? Not treat the problem right then and there, because emotions are high and you want to eat dinner and you want to get things done. But later on, taking each child privately and saying to the middle child, you know, why are you doing that? Do you know why you're doing that? And, you know, and then the younger child, I see you're squawking a lot. You know, what is the problem? You know, and then that child could tell you what's happening. Then you can bring the both of them together and say, how can we fix this? So both children, first of all, are heard. The older one can say, you don't give me very much attention, or Susie's so cute, everybody loves her. I just want to get her in trouble once in a while. Or she can be honest and say whatever's on her mind. The youngest can say, I'm not doing anything, and I don't, you know, I keep getting stuck in this. You know, I'm not trying to be, you know, interfering or loud or wrong. I get so frustrated when she does that. And so then they feel heard. You find the root of the problem. Oh, I need to give more attention to that middle child. Believe it or not, sometimes when our children are the most unlovely, they're the ones we want to catch doing good. They're the ones we want to intentionally say, I'm going to go and take them out and spend time with them. We think we need to be more severe with them, but really it's a cry saying, I'm not sure what the cry is. A cry could be, I'm not feeling heard. I don't feel loved. Something is bothering me at school. We need to find the root. And that usually does solve the problem. You know what I mean? And then we can take it a step further. We can mend their relationship by, when they get together, saying, you know, to the middle child, well, maybe you can, you know, this is really upsetting. Maybe you can write a letter saying you're sorry, and maybe the little one can do something nice for you, and you try to help repair that relationship, because we think it's a little thing, but every time there's a tear in the fabric of their bonding, you're going to get them farther and farther apart and more hidden resentment, and then you're going to have bigger and bigger sibling rivalry problems. So we want to get to the root while it's still small, while we can still take care of it. Is he feeling frustrated, though, in the middle of it? So there's two things you want to do. First, you want to deal with his level of frustration, and you want to praise him and say, it is not easy to be the older brother. You're making these nice Lego buildings, and he's trashing it down. Everything you build up, he knocks down. Or he's so noisy that you can't hear. Sometimes the baby's crying or whatever. And, you know, I appreciate that you're being such a great brother to him. And it is hard, but I'm proud of you. That's so affirming. You don't realize how much children need to be affirmed. They need to know what they're doing right so they can repeat it. But then you want to, if he's being taken advantage of, like if he's mild enough that the little one's becoming a tyrant, you want to tell him when he can interfere or when he needs to go get you. You can say to him, well, we know you can't hit him, but you can say to him, Micah, what I do is, you can say, teach him the art of diversion. Now, little babies, they can be diverted very easily. So I'm going to teach you a skill, Micah. You can say, go and grab anything that looks interesting and give it to him, and then he won't bother you. So you can teach him diverting. And if diverting doesn't work, you can teach him to say, no hitting, and put his hands out. Now, if he still doesn't, come and get me, and mommy will make sure that he has to follow rules too. Now he feels protected. He feels like, well, you and I are on the same team. You first affirm that it's hard, because it's really hard, right? We know the adult things we do are hard, but little kids have to do hard things too. Put yourself in the place of a four-year-old who's always having a little one knock everything down or scream or do all sorts of things like that. You affirm that it's hard, you tell him that you're on his team, you give him some tools to handle it, and you let him know that when it gets overwhelming, you're going to rescue him. And now you have a son that's on your team.
I just, you know, the comments, just really, I wish I had this, heard this speech before. It's, I found a lot of things I have done wrong.
We all do. That's right. Can I just say one thing with that? I want to back off, because I think sometimes it just means you're a really good mom to admit that too. Because the best moms are the ones that have the most guilt. It's the parents that don't really care, that don't have the guilt. So if you're feeling guilty, just know it's because you love your child and you want to do right. And there are no perfect parents, none. So I just want to relieve you all from the burden of feeling you have to be perfect for your children to turn out right, because there's a verse in the Bible that says, love covers a multitude of sins. Now, as I said before, my dad wasn't perfect, but my dad was an awesome dad. And when I got to be an adult, I did confront him about a couple things that really hurt me. And he cried, and we hugged each other, and we have the closest relationship. When he was a little younger, we danced. He loves ballroom dancing, and he actually taught it to some GE people. He used to go into GE and teach ballroom dancing. And he, in his older age, and we played tennis, and we'd go out to eat, and we have a beautiful relationship, but he wasn't perfect. And even if you do it wrong, if you love your children, just know that love does cover a multitude of sins. Now, go ahead.
The first question is, like you said, it allows kids, each kid to have their separate.
Yes.
Circle.
Yes.
I'm doing it with my daughter because my daughter is 6 and a half and my son is only, just about 4. And she had her girlfriend and they play really well. Your friend she makes not long ago. And now I feel a sense that my daughter spent way too much time with her girlfriend. And when the two of them playing together, my son is being like ignored. Because a lot of things these two 6-year-old doing, and my son cannot catch up with them.
Right.
So in a situation like this, I try to reduce the, when I'm possible, I try, just don't let the two of them, my daughter and her girlfriend, spend too much time together, like separate them. But is it another way to handle this? And so she can have this friendship.
Yeah. I think as a 6-year-old, you're really becoming very social. It begins when children are 2 and 3 years old, they do what's called parallel play. They like to be next to a child, but they don't really interact. They just play. When they hit 4, 5, and 6, they do what's called cooperative play. This is a imaginary play. This is great play that's very good for the brain. And it takes time to set up. You be the mommy, I'll be the daddy. We get out all the equipment and the baking supplies and and you put a 2-year-old in, and it's just going to mess everything up, or a 4-year-old. And I really do think, that that friendship is very powerful and needs to be preserved. She needs to know she has a friend and that they have time together. And I think that you really do have to separate that 4-year-old, even though he wants to be with them, because you don't want her to resent him. And he is very young, and he is different. And what I always say is that I would find something special for that 4-year-old to do with you. You buy bubbles, and you say, buddy, so that he doesn't feel bad. I have a special plan for you and I. We're going outside to do the bubbles. Well, what might happen, and it has happened in the past, is you two are having so much fun, the girls will want to come out and play with you, and there you solve the whole problem. You know what I mean? But if you tell her, I respect that you need time alone, and this is the time with your girl, you'll be with your brother when the girl's not here, and you'll do things with them. You may have that, but can you give? Let's make an agreement. Can you give 20 minutes of the time at the end where we can all have a snack together and he can interact with you? Or can we do 20 minutes where we'll play Play-Doh at the end? You can go outside and I won't let him outside, but at the very end, can we do the Play-Doh, or vice versa? You be inside, but at the very end, can you all go out and swing on swings? And that would show your brother you love him, because I know you do. I know you're a good sister. See, now you're speaking a positive prophetic thing into them, saying, I know you love him. I know it's hard. So now you're affirming that it's hard, but you're giving her an opportunity to be the hero, rather than saying, you never let your brother in. Now you be nice and let your brother in. And I'm so selfish, and he's crying over there in the corner. Do you see? Nobody wants to help with that. But if you're setting her up to be the hero, but you're also giving her boundaries to have some friendship, it's going to go totally different.
I think that actually goes a long way too. When they grow up in the school, you cannot make everyone like you. You cannot always be the popular kid. You have to find your circle.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. And to be okay with that. It's the lies that your children believe that make them sick. It really is. And if it's a lie that you don't love them and you love someone, you love the sister better, you got to get to the bottom of that and extinguish that. Or if it's the lie that I must be liked by everybody to be okay, then you have to get to the bottom of that and extinguish that with truth. Because the Bible says the truth is what sets us free. And if we're connected with our children, there are lies they're believing every day. We need to know them well enough and have them trust us enough to tell us what they're thinking so we can correct those things that they're believing so they don't end up with anorexia and they don't end up cutting themselves when they're 17 years of age, right? Right. Sure.
Second one is my son and my daughter both want me to read them story at the time. And we have been doing that before we set.
That's a good practice.
We just separate them almost half a year ago. So because my daughter is old enough, I want her to have her own room.
Yeah.
And so before was not a problem because they stay in the same room in two beds. I was in the middle reading them story. So they would get, each one get a story. This has been going on for a little while because after I separate them and they each one story, bedtime story at the same time. And it was okay for a while to have daddy to tell my daughter's story. But somehow recently she feels very strongly that she wants a story when brother has a story. So is there any,
Well, again, you got to appeal to their ability to solve problems. You can say, listen, so-and-so, we're having a real problem. You want me to read you the story. The same time the other one wants to read, and I'm not two people, I'm only one. I can't figure this out, but I know you're really smart. Will you help me? Help me to figure out a way that you can be happy and this will work. There's got to be a way. I'm sure you could figure it out. That's kind of like what a family meeting is like. And you appeal to their problem-solving skills. And maybe she'll come up with something. Well, maybe daddy can read to her while mommy reads to her, or maybe vice versa. Or maybe one night I'll read to just one child and the next night I'll read to the other child. Or maybe we'll put you both together in the bed. It doesn't matter. But you can solve that problem because you can see that. I can't split myself in two. I wish I could, you know. And, you know, you can even be silly about it. You wouldn't want mommy split in two, would you? You know, in humor. Can I just add one more thing? I know with sibling rivalry or any problem in the household, especially a stressful problem, that humor is a great diffuser. And it's one of the biggest tools I had in my tool belt growing up. I remember some times where the kids were misbehaving terribly, and I was looking at my husband like, help me. And he just one day, I remember, he ran in the kitchen, he grabbed a pot with a handle, and he stuck it on his head. They were about 5 and 7 or 4 and 6, and he came in, and he just started walking around, and they just burst out laughing, because dad was just being ridiculous, and they all started to get along, because humor can diffuse the tension. You know, there's times where we would just put music on, and get up in there, and just start dancing with them, you know what I mean, when they're all cranky, and I just encourage you, sometimes just to let down your hair and let them see a silly side of you. Even my dad, who was so serious, I remember one time he grew up in South America, and he used to tell me he had a friend that they didn't have cell phones then either. So he'd whistle a special whistle to get his friend to come. And he had told me a story, and all of a sudden he went running out the door and he whistled the special whistle for his friend to come. And I just remember, that may not sound silly, but I just thought, I saw my dad as a child, you know? I saw what his life was like, and it just made me laugh that he was silly enough to go out and pretend his friend was going to come out and play with him, you know? So those are the things your children remember as the humorous experiences that you had together, and then again, you're creating bonding. You're creating family memories. You're creating, even, you know, I say camping is the greatest thing, even if it goes wrong, because I remember, you know, finding a toad in my sleeping bag and everybody laughing, and I remember when the day we got rained on and all of us were soaking wet, but we laugh about it now. It's those things that happen, even the bad things, that can bind you together if you have a good attitude. So I hope this helps you. God bless each and every one of you. Oh, Oh, I forgot just one thing. This is really quick. I brought this because I knew I was going to forget it. Do you know what this is? Yes, it's called the special plate. And this is a great tool to have in the family, even if you only have one child. What you do is, and it won't last forever. You can't do it for a solid year, but it works for a good week or two. You put this different plate at the table. You say, this is a special plate. And whoever gets the plate, we have to go around and say one thing that we appreciate about this child. So let's say Susie gets a plate. Someone else will go, well, Susie, she helped me the other day. And someone else will say, I love how Susie's so kind and generous. She gave me one of her Tootsie Rolls or something. And then the mom gets to say something and dad gets to say something. And the next day it goes to the next child. So even if you had a tough day, you're still feeding that love language of the children, because when that plate comes out, everybody has to say something good about it. And as a parent, you need affirming too. Won't it be nice to hear when you get the plate what your kids have to say about you? So try for a week or two, buy a special plate and say, we're going to play a family game and we're going to see who gets the family plate, the special plate, and whoever gets it, we have to go around and say something good about that person. Yes, yeah, absolutely. That is definitely a way to fill the child's bucket of love.